terrific tune. Excuse me for interrupting it like that. Golly, Mike.
that's a track we recorded just before we came to America. It's going to be on a new album, and we'll be finishing the album off when we get back from the States.
That's called Blaze of Glory.
That's right, yeah.
That is a blaze of glory. And you're talking about number one, sort of, number one or nothing.
I hate to tell you, Bono, you're going to have to move out if he keeps this up.
We've got a few more songs.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
That's terrific. When's it going to be out?
Well, the album will be coming out probably in the first week in September. We're going straight back to Britain after we've done the tour with you two. We're going to do the album as soon as we get back and release it as soon as we can. And we're really looking forward to doing it because we've got a lot of songs off our sleeves, you know, that are like blazing. And a song called 68 Guns we do is just going to be a big one. And a song called Tell Me, you know, just trying to... We've got a lot of new songs as well. So we're quite lucky because we've got three songwriters.
Will we be hearing this tomorrow night?
You certainly will be hearing it tomorrow night.
Well, many thanks for bringing that tape by. We're going to have to take a short break, and we will be back with more phone calls for Mike and Bono on the Rock and Roll Alternative. Hang on a second. Okay, now you are on the Rock and Roll Alternative. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
All right. Question to any band member. First, initially, let me say I appreciate the music, especially last album.
Thank you.
The question is, you didn't accept the label Political Rock a few minutes ago. Thank goodness labels are a pain. And you mentioned the word personal. But if you're talking about personal conflicts and things like that on the album, how is it that singing the songs and writing the music and all addresses them? I guess what I'm saying is kind of where you're going with music. How's it addressing the concerns that you mentioned?
I'm not sure I fully grasp the question.
Can your band make a difference through music?
John answers to say you want a revolution. I don't feel... A lot of people talk about changing the world, and yet they refuse to change themselves, you know. And I was never into using the stage as a soapbox, you know. Like, I never believe in pointing the finger at anybody other than yourself, or it's a we. You know, I never go you, it's always a we. And I think if people change, and music has changed me as a person, I'm sure it changes other people. If it changes people, then it can change places. And because, you know, people,
they make up places.
Yeah. So I do believe it can change. Because I think, you know, sometimes a lot of the problems in our society that we see are symptoms of something much, much deeper. You know, we look at poverty and we look at the political system. We feel it's unjust or unfair. But a lot of that are they just symptoms of greed, or maybe of people who, when they take control of power, can't handle the power. And so I'm interested in music, because music touches, really reaches deep into people's hearts. And me, when I put on headphones or when I listen to a song like Blaze of Glory, it affects me and it changes me, and it really... I want to go out and I want to change the world. I'm naive and I'm an idiot enough to want to, you know. And so the music is the soundtrack to change in a lot of ways.
Your concerts are such joyous experiences.
Yeah, they're an explosion. And they should be. Rock and roll should be a release, you know. Really should. I don't like people lecturing to me, though, in bands. I never like that. I always figure, you know, it's like the preachers on television. Feel sometimes if they stick their finger out of the screen, they're pointing at you. I feel, well, why don't they point at themselves as well? Because, you know, I mean, you get good and bad preachers, I know that, but I feel it's the same in music. I don't like a singer getting on stage going, you've a lot to answer for. I go, hey man, you've a lot to answer for. Hey, look, I just said man. That's the effect this country has on me. I like it. I'm going through wah and man.
You're turning into an American.
I don't regret that at all. It's very hip to knock America in Europe because of maybe of what is happening, you know, the kind of bombs being planted over there. But I'm here because I want to be here. Actually, I can hear somebody on the phone.
Yes, we've got somebody.
Hello?
Who's this? Who's
Hi
this?
There.
This is Michaud.
Hi, Michaud.
I'm the younger brother of Josh, Bono.
Quite a family.
You people must have an inside line.
Yeah, well, not really. We just call long distance.
Where are you calling from?
We're calling from Denton.
That's about...
Where's that?
20, 30 miles north of here.
Actually, 40, but...
40. You're moving away anyway. What's your question, Michaud?
Well, I would just... I'll get to it later, but I would just like to say that U2 is a very, it has grown on our hearts, and it's a very big part of us, and every time we listen to it, it takes us back to the age of, you know, the time that we had purchased the first album, Boy. Mm-hmm. And I just turned 16, and every time I listen to the album, I've been going through a bunch of changes, and I used to listen to it every night before I'd go to sleep. And at one point, I couldn't listen to the album anymore because it brought back such nostalgia that it upset me a whole lot. But finally, you know, I gave in to that, and I still listen to it, and I worship it and love it. And I guess here's my big question. And I was wondering if tomorrow in Dallas, if we could possibly get together for lunch and everything, because Josh and I have so many questions that we would love to just...
Yeah, you know, Josh and yourself are obviously very special people in the sense that you're willing to, on the radio, in front of a lot of people, to say what the music means to you, and I appreciate that, I really do. I also appreciate your offer for lunch. Maybe I will say yes, actually.
Because we have so much to say, and we find you a lot like us in certain ways. And
where are we playing tomorrow? I mean, we're playing Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
We would come to Dallas.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant we were playing somewhere else. Sorry, I thought you... No, because... yeah, okay. But if we're playing Dallas, I'll tell you what to do. Come down to the sound check. All right?
Mm-hmm. Before the concert?
Yeah,
I don't...
And don't tell our road manager that I told you this.
He's listening, you know.
Yeah.
But come down about 4:30, and maybe we get...
George, Bono?
Yeah?
George knows our number. If you want to keep it a little bit more intimate, we can call you back. Or...
No, sound check's intimate enough.
Not being very intimate at the moment with about all of Dallas and Fort Worth.
Yeah, I mean, no, if you want to come down to the sound check, do come down.
You mean before the concert tomorrow night?
Yeah. Come down at
what time?
Down about 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Mish.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. See ya.
Boy, it's going to be an intimate sound check tomorrow, I can tell already.
They're great words to be used, actually.
You get a weird feeling when people say they worship an album. I mean, it's just
actually
a
don't
bit
they
plastic.
Don't yeah, but they don't worship it. It's just this is just a word. And you find people saying, "Oh, they worship it." That's really terrible, but they don't. It's mutual respect. I like to think, you know, you're on stage. I'm the singer, and I receive a lot of applause, and it comes back. And those people, they give you a lot. They give you everything they have usually for the hour and a half you're on stage, but the next day, you know. If I asked somebody to kiss my feet, they'd say, you know, kiss my ass. They'd say, you know, sure. They'd say, go away. And if I was walking down the street and I saw one of the people in the audience, and they were like drawing on the pavement, say they were an artist and they're drawing on the pavement, I'd stop, and I'd, you know, throw down my dollar, or I'd say, wow, that's really good, and I would give them my applause. And I do think it's mutual. And when somebody says they worship it, they don't. They mean that in the best possible sense.
You're very genuine on stage. On a lot of the recordings we've had your live concerts on here between the songs, and I've noticed this actually in person as well. You're going, thank you, you know. But while the song's fading out, you're going, thank you, while the band's gearing up for the next one. And I feel it's a very sincere, hey,
yeah,
thanks,
the,
folks.
Yeah, the band sometimes, they say, well, you ever shut up? But I do lose myself on stage, and I do some things that, you know, afterwards when I hear on tape, I get, you know, it really kind of flips me out.
But it's for the moment.
Yeah, I live very much for the moment on stage.
Let's see what else somebody has to say here. Okay, you're on the Rock and Roll Alternative this time.
Yeah, I just want to tell Bono that tomorrow night's my first concert because my mom knows how much I like the band.
Oh, this is a good one to start it out with.
Yeah, I'm real excited. And I also want to ask, what inspires them to write their work?
Mm-hmm. What's your name?
Ian Murray. Bono, I saw you downstairs just like half an hour ago or so. You showed me a record for Ian Murray.
Pardon? What was that last sentence?
I remember
signing to Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
I remember you, in fact.
Okay.
It's your first concert. Well,
and I want to know what inspires them to write their work and how they first got started, what first inspired them.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Do you get inspiration from any one place?
No, there's no rules. I mean, whenever there is rules, you try to throw them out. We write songs in lots of different ways. So sometimes we don't write songs, we just write pieces of music. I mean, it could be through improvisation. Often somebody just sparks off, you know, somebody else, and we're working in a group, and we'll play like 10 minutes, and out of that 10 minutes, there'll be 2 minutes that's of interest, and we listen back to a tape or maybe a sound check. We've been talking about sound checks earlier on, and we listen back to a tape that we didn't think was any good, and we'll hear something that will be strong in it, and we'll develop that. A song like I Will Follow was written in about 10 minutes. The same with, say, Party Girl. Even 40 was written very quickly. New Year's Day was the opposite. It was long, the music was structured, and then I improvised both melodically and lyrically over the musical structure to try and get across what I had to say. And the images I had in mind came from film that I had seen, as I say, documentary footage of and I tried to just get this across in the music. There are no rules. So, sometimes it will be written on an acoustic guitar, sometimes it will be written on a bass, sometimes it will be written on the toilet.
I'd heard you had a habit of going in when you do your vocals and just kind of extemporaneously letting loose with verbiage, and then just letting Steve chop it all together.
Yeah, Steve and myself worked out a kind of interesting relationship. It was a nightmare for him, I should say. Actually, last week he was over. He's been over in the U.S. with us, and he was saying, don't stop working like that, even though I feel like, you know, I want you to stop when I'm working with you. Don't stop, because he realizes that out of that improvisation come great moments that you wouldn't normally get. Yeah, sometimes we just leave. There's 24 tracks, and leave maybe 6 tracks open for vocal. And I'll go in and I will have a few images, a few words on my mind, a few lines, and I'll sing those lines. And then other lines will come, and other melodies will come. And then I'll fill up another track and another track and another track, and then we'll listen back to them, and we'll see that throughout the 6 tracks, if there were 6, a train of thought. And you'll say, wow, I can see now. You know, and people say, wow, you're piecing it together. And really what you're finding out is what's really in your subconscious more than what's the front of your brain, if you know what I mean. What's really bothering you, or what's really you're excited about. Whereas if you sit down with a pen and paper, you know, you write. You know, people write poetry. I was kind of, people when I was 13, I used to write poetry, but it was very self-conscious, the words, because
you had to rhyme too.
I was writing and I had to rhyme, and it's like a straitjacket. When you're set on fire by a piece of music and you're just screaming and you're just singing and suddenly the music becomes much more important than some of its parts.
In Sunday Bloody Sunday, you had the line, how long must I sing this song? Mm. Turned up again in 40.
Yeah, it's like they're like bookends to the LP. I consider 40 to be the refrain of Sunday Bloody Sunday. Sunday starts the album, 40 closes it. And again, it was just emphasizing the point, you know, we don't have to continue in the way we're continuing in our homeland. It was a message to the people of Ireland, really.
Talking about extemporaneous vocals, last time you were through...
It's a very big word, by the way, George.
I paid a whole quarter for that one, and I'm going to use it all night. You played a tape for me of Trash Trampling Party Girl before it was recorded.
That's
and
right.
it had the weird vocal to it. That was just kind of all these mishmash of words.
That's great.
I want to play the other side of that, which is a celebration, since we have no hope in the world of hearing this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Since the band's forgotten it, we got to play that. This is a terrific track. Is it ever going to appear on an album?
No. I don't think so.
Do you not like it?
No, I do like it, actually. Sometimes I hate it. I mean, it's like with a lot of music. If I hear it in a club, it really excites me. And I think it is a forerunner to war and to a lot of the themes. It was great in Europe because a song like Seconds, a lot of people thought was very serious on the LP War Seconds, its anti-nuclear statement. They didn't see the sense of humor to it. It's sort of black humor where we're using a lot of cliches. You know, it takes a second to say goodbye, blah, blah, blah. And some people took it very seriously. And it is black humor, and it is to be taken sort of seriously. But this song had the lines in it, I believe in a third world war. I believe in the atomic bomb. I believe in the powers that be, but they won't overpower me. And of course, a lot of people, they heard, I believe in a third world war, I believe in an atomic bomb, thought it was some sort of, you know, Hitler part two. And Europeans especially was, oh, no, viva la France, and it was all like, great. All sorts of chaos broke out. They said, what do you mean you believe in the atomic bomb? And I was trying to say in the song, I believe in a third world war, there's people talking about the Third World War, but it's already happened. I mean, it's happened in the Third World, that's obvious. But I was saying, these are facts of life. I believe in them. I believe in the powers that be, but they won't overpower me. And that's the point. But a lot of people didn't reach the fourth line.
Celebration, you two on the Rock and Roll Alternative in the studio with us tonight. Mike Peters from The Alarm and Bono from U2. And I really want to thank you guys for dropping by. We've got a few more moments, and we are going to take one more phone call here from the Metroplex. Let's see what this person wants. Yes, you're live on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering, when U2 was preparing this album War, did they just, when they started recording it, did they just suddenly realize about the things that were going on in Ireland, or was it just like they just thought that this was the time to start expressing themselves about it?
Sort of answer that question when I was saying about when we released LP Boy, and we left our country for the first time as a band. That's when the process started, and the song Tomorrow on October we're allowing it to come through. A lot of our feelings were coming through, but it's that's another story. That song is a special song. But on War, we did, as you well put it, we felt the time was right, because we felt that a lot of the music was wallpaper music that we were hearing on the radio, and we felt that people were saying nothing and saying it all the time, and we felt that now is important to say something strong. I mean, by the way, earlier on when I was talking about new music and old music, I didn't mean to knock what is new in favor of what is past. I was just knocking anything that's not good. I mean, it's like,
seems reasonable.
Yeah, I'd like to make that point. That not all music of the 80s is bland and pap. And to the contrary, I think the 80s are going to be very exciting, far more exciting than the 70s.
Okay, George, I was just kind of wondering, are they going to keep putting you on Sunday nights, like at 10:30?
That's the way it's been for a little over 3 years.
Yeah, it has. They're not thinking about changing it, because I think you've gotten a little more popular lately. I was wondering if they're changing.
Well, that just takes time. I think, Bono, you know about being popular in an underground. And
I think if enough people write in, and if enough people ring in and say, this is the best rock and roll show on the planet, things start to happen, you know?
I'll settle for a hemisphere, actually.
That's all I have to say.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Thank you.
We're going to take one more here. Yes.
Hi, George.
Yes.
Am I on the air?
Yes, quickly. What's up?
My name's John, and I just wanted to say to Bono, and I guess to the entire band, don't think you're idiots because you'd like to change the world. A lot of us would like to, and I think it's great. And I think your music has a great way of saying that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's terrific that there are still some bands left that would like to say the world can be changed. And even if it can, it's worth a try, you know?
Yeah, and you say, I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
Right. Is there anything you've always wanted to ask the band?
Who are your influences? Who are your musical influences? I'm curious.
What time is it? I'm curious as well. I think our biggest influences are each other, actually. I.e. The Edge. Adam and Larry.
He cuts a mysterious figure.
And The Edge?
Larry. Never really see him out in the forefront much.
Well, Larry's like a brother in many ways to me. Well, the whole group are well. But he's a lot to say. But he's not into saying it just every day, you know. And I respect that in him. He doesn't like to be put on the spot to explain something that he can't explain, which is music. And I can't explain it either, but I try.
I want to play something very unusual. Would you mind if I play a track of yours called The Fool?
I can't even say that I mind, because I can't remember the song. This was the first song that was ever built in that improvised way. I think this is probably 5 years old. We were 16 when we made this.
This is from...
In fact, 15. Larry was 15. I was 16.
Produced by the member of Horselips, Devlin.
Barry Devlin,
yeah. Right. From
sort of half produced by him. Larry had his... he broke his leg, he actually ran over his foot in a motorbike. And he was in the studio. He was 15 years old, and we were trying to make a demo. And remember Larry's old man, that's Larry Mullen Sr., was like knocking on the door of the studio saying, I want my son back. I want him to be a jazz drummer. He's cut his hair, you know.
So this is a very young...
This is a very young
yes,
U2.
Yes, very young U2. The Fool, that's the right title?
That is, I think, yeah. Can I hear this, actually?
That is a song called The Fool, and a very young, very frantic U2 there. So you do have garage roots.
Oh, yeah. We're the original garage band from GarageBand. If we can do it, anyone can do it, believe me.
You've come a long way since then. An awful long way.
I don't know. Listen to that. Sometimes I think we should go back. I mean, it has got a lot of dynamics to it.
I wanted to ask you one more thing before we break up class here, and that is, I understand you're writing a music score for the Royal Dublin Ballet.
Yeah, it's a long way from The Fool. Or is it? Yeah, we are, actually. A lot of piano work, some sort of metronomic type work as well, using machines. It's a big sellout, folks, here it comes. No, I've nothing against machines, it's the machines that work, the machines that bother me. No, it's just something that we're working on at the moment, more myself and Edge, and I think when we get back, Larry and Adam are going to get into it more. So a lot of some movies want us to do soundtracks as well. There's two on offer at the moment, which I can't really say what they are.
Right.
But,
is this something we'll see on vinyl shortly, perhaps?
Well, I don't know. I think there will be something out before the end of the year that's new, and I'll make sure you have a copy.
Terrific. Mike, Bono, many thanks for coming and joining us on the Rock and Roll Alternative tonight. We're going to close out with a beautiful song, Tomorrow. This is just a marvelous track from the October album, the much maligned, much ignored October album. You need to check this one out if you like the War. Buy all the others because they're worth it. You bought them, didn't you?
I don't have them actually. I wish I did. In fact, I think October is probably the bravest of the three in its content and what it was trying to do. I think it should have proved to people that we weren't about just trying to make Boy 2 or I Will Fall Apart 2, that there was more to the group. It came out awkwardly, but it came out in a spirited way. And this is one of my favorite songs of all time.